overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
And thank you all for showing up. You look so beautiful out there with your masks on, your safe distancing. And for those of you out there in virtual land, if you choose to come down here and join us on Sunday mornings, we do our revealing service from 9:45 to 10:15, and it's always a heartfelt experience, and then we join here in the sanctuary. It's Valentine's Day today, so happy Valentine's. Beloved Charlotte Hemlock over there, she brought in some rocks for us, Valentine's Day rocks, and she has her own pet rock that she keeps with her. And if you need love in your life, it's nice to know that you can pick up a rock and lo, I am there. It says even in the Bible, cleave to the branch and lo, I am there. Pick up a rock and lo, I am there. So the universe is saying that I am everywhere. I was sharing with them in the revealing service on my Zen calendar this morning. There is a question posed to Ramana Maharshi, the saint from India. And the question was, how do we treat other people? And Ramana Maharshi says, there are no other people. So when you hear a statement like that, it helps us awaken to a realization that there's only one here. There's one life. That life is God's life, and that life is perfect, and that life is my life now. And when we shift the way we see things, then we're no longer perceiving ourselves as separate entities and making somebody other, but we're recognizing that we're all connected in this, what they call the net of Indra, where every one of us is a reflection of each other. And then even the ones we're having challenges with, they become our strange teachers because they show us where, in a way, we've closed our heart off, or maybe we've judged somehow that they're other. And so the work is not to change them. It's never to change the other. It's always to see other with a fresh way. And when we can look at people with the eyes of compassion, with the eyes of forgiveness, and ultimately all forgiveness is self-forgiveness, well, then we find ourselves navigating this seemingly challenging life in a more skillful way. I was sharing with my friend Chris, who's here for the first time, when I discovered this teaching, I was 30 years old, and I was living with the idea that life sucked. It was the big suck. And Chris is kind of there right now. And I came and I was sitting in the back of the room and I was hearing things that in my heart I knew were true. And it was pointing me to how I was responding to life. I was making life difficult because I was letting it be cause to my suffering. Other people's opinions, other people's behavior, you name it, I was struggling in this life experience. And so the gift that that gave me was it took me to myself. And I realized that I have to see the world in a different way. My beloved mother, she was just the most wonderful mother, but whenever I was around her, she pushed all my buttons and I would become a mess. And I thought, how can I love this woman who's pushing all my buttons? And then my husband of 45 years, he laughed and he says, that's because she installed those buttons. And his simple laughter and my willingness to then, when the button would be pushed, I would not react, but I would go, ah, there she is. She's handing me the platter of guilt again. You know, you need to fix this. You need to change this. And my mother had a PhD in codependency, and she wanted to transmit that to me, her son. And I had to learn that that path doesn't work for me. That's your path. She would come and visit, and she would sit on the front porch, smoking her cigarettes, and she would invite strangers from the street into the house. And I said, Mom, I try to keep a low profile. I don't want everybody coming and sitting and walking in my house. Well, that's what my mother does. That's just who she is. So I had to honor that this is, and learn to navigate in a more skillful way. So what if life will give us everything in advance of our asking, and we then begin to bless it all? It's interesting, when you look at a church, oftentimes we approach a church with a stereotypical idea of what it is. I know that I did when I started Chris. I said, religion's the opiate of the people, and I don't want to have anything to do with a religion. But then when I discovered the Center for Spiritual Living, I realized it wasn't really a religion. It was more of a teaching. And the word religion comes from the Latin word religio, which means to tie you back to source. So if you are in a religion, it's not worth anything unless it connects you to your center. If you study Sanskrit in the Hindu traditions, they call it yoga. And yoga means the same thing as religion. Yoga means to yoke back to the source, to the center, to the peace, to the love. And this month of February, we're exploring the dynamic of love. And there's a wonderful little book called Love, The Ultimate Answer and Meaning of Life. So what if it's all about love? But it's not the love that we thought love was. So then we have to change the way we see love. When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. So love is never out there. I was telling my beloved Michael here, I asked if he's in another relationship, and he says, not right now. And then I said, well, you know the one relationship you need to have. And of course, he's been around me long enough to know that I have to have a relationship with this one. And when I can have a loving relationship with self, with the love within the self, well, then that love ripples out to everyone. It's not a special love. You know, we think we're here to find a special love. And in the Course in Miracles, the big no-no is to find the special love, that one person is the source of this love. It can't be that way. This love has equanimity. You know, Charlotte brought us all these Valentine's rocks. Now, if Charlotte was attached to her rocks, she couldn't freely offer them to all these lovely people because it was an expression of love that she was offering to another one. Now, was my rock more special than Shannon's rock? We both have fish rocks. And so my little fish rock and her fish rock kissed, and then I kissed Michael's little fish rock, and I realized there's only one rock. That rock is God's rock, and that rock is my rock now. And you all have it. So then you begin to say, huh? Is it that simple? Yeah, it's simple. There's only one power in the universe, and that power is love. In the book of John, it says, God is love. Well, now, that is that a noun or is that a verb? Or is it both? So if God is love, well, then when we're loving, are we being God-like? And then ponder those thoughts, not with the idea that you're here to find an answer, but because the mind is 10 times more fertile when it's living in the question than when someone gives you a concrete answer. So what if this learning it at whatever age that you're entering into this, and someone would say to me, you know, I found this teaching so late in life. I say, you found it at the right time for you, because you truly have to be ready for a shift in consciousness. You have to be willing to let go of the old idea for the new idea to emerge. One of the very first teachings I learned in this was you have to deny before you can affirm. You have to deny the BS, the belief systems that don't work for you. You know, I was raised in the Christian tradition that you were born in sin. Well, I think that that's fakakta. That's nonsense. We're born perfect. Your little girl wasn't born in sin. She was an angel that came from heaven right through her mommy and daddy. And when you see things differently, well, then you don't have to find a way to get God's approval here. And so when you let go of that old idea, as someone said, you've created a vacuum in consciousness, then we have to be very careful what we let fill that vacuum. Is it another doctrine? Is it another teaching? Is it another wrathful God? Or is it a loving presence that has always been there, this changeless reality amidst a changing world? So then could we embrace change? Because life is about change. It's about growth. In Buddhism, they teach the principle of impermanence, that things come and things go. You'll have a flower one day, and then it'll wilt, and it'll go away. And then you plant a seed, and you'll have another life. You'll have a butterfly, and it'll fly through your house, and for 10 days, you'll be making love to the butterfly, and then the butterfly leaves you. But the essence of the butterfly never left. So what if we get to see things? What doesn't change? What is eternal? Could we find a love that is deathless and eternal? This Sunday, I'm talking about becoming love. Is that too big of an idea? Raymond Charles Barker used to say, an idea belongs to the one who embraces it. So if I share with you that what you are is love itself, if that feels like it could grow within you, well, then what would love look like if it were to flower within your heart, if love were to flower within your mind? Could this love push away, or would this love by its very nature embrace everything? The button pushers, the button, the confusion, the anxiety. When people tell me that they're uncertain, I say, well, could love embrace that uncertainty? These are uncertain times. Mark my words, we're wearing masks. I haven't gotten my shot yet. I registered at two or three different places and no one has responded yet. So am I going to go down anxiety road, or I'm going to just trust and know that when conditions are right, as the Buddha said, things manifest. When conditions are right, Chris found us on the internet and showed up here at the center on Valentine's Day. What a beautiful day to find us on Valentine's Day. I love this holiday. It's a holiday about love. It's a holiday that we get to love with equanimity. Do you remember when you were in elementary school? I remember that my mother would buy me a pack of those cheap Valentines, and you would fill them all out, and then you would put them on every desk of every kid. Is this what old people do? Do young people still do that? And you'd put the Valentines on everything. But you wanted to find that one special one for the pretty girl that you like, but you're too young to admit that you like this pretty girl, but you'd find the one that said, I love you. And you would put it on her desk, and hoping that it wasn't too much, but it was just enough to let her know that she was special. So even then, you're starting to work on special love, and you make the other the source of your... And then you get lost. You get lost in that first stage of life where it's all about me and my story and my struggle, my preferences, my wants, my needs, my demands. And then you go through life suffering because life isn't working out the way you thought it would. And you put your forehead on your wrist on your forehead, and until you stop doing that, you show up at a center like this and you realize, if I'm suffering, it's because I went down the path of suffering and I'm getting off that road now. I'm getting on the path of conscious co-creation with the universe. I'm going to choose empowering, loving thoughts, and they're going to assist me in creating a new life, not a life of victimhood, but a life where I can be courageous and strong and safe. It was Carl Jung. I was reading Carl Jung the other day. He's this wonderful mystic psychologist. And he said two things that I thought were really relevant for me. He says, you don't solve problems. He says, you outgrow them. Huh. Now, we have a culture that my husband considers himself a problem solver. Do you know what problem solvers create for themselves? I'll give you one guess. It begins with P and it ends with M. If you consider yourself a problem solver, you need problems to solve. But when you realize that the problem is just something in my mind that I'm calling a problem, you know, I can outgrow that belief system. I have a very old dog named Bert, and he's 15 years old. He has a hard time with his hips. We had ice on the back steps. He can't climb the steps. He's 50, 60 pounds. He's kind of heavy to lift. And you could consider that a problem, or you could consider it an opportunity to find a way to help him navigate through his old years. And so now I assist him. I'll hold his fanny as he goes down the steps and he comes up the steps. And just to have my hands holding his little fanny, he feels supported by me. I have a pug. And today is the year anniversary that Humphrey went into surgery. He had an MRI. I think it was $700 for an MRI to decide whether he was going to live or not. He had had a herniated disc on February 9th last year. He was paralyzed from the neck down. Trey's up in New York City with his sisters. So I'm all alone with the pug paralyzed, an old dog that has a hard time walking. And from the 9th to the 14th, I'm there carrying him and lifting him up and down. He's paralyzed. And on the 14th, they did the MRI, and I get the phone call from the hospital. And they said, it isn't a tumor. It's a herniated disc in his neck, and we'll do the surgery today if it's okay with you. So we give him the credit card. I think it was $5,000. I don't know. Whatever it is, take care of the pug. You hand him the MasterCard or the Visa. And they shaved his little neck here, and they cut him right through here, and they fixed the cervical vertebra. And we went and picked him up the next morning. And whereas he was just completely limp, he had just enough to create a little resistance with my hand. Something, the nerves were coming back. And so I watched that little pug on Valentine's Day. And so people were calling me on Valentine's Day to see how I was. I said, it's the best Valentine's Day I ever had. My dog lived. He survived the surgery. And then he got a little bit of strength in his paws, you know. And before you know it, I could put him down. He could stand and then he'd fall over. He was like a little drunken sailor. He was kind of cute to watch. And he hadn't peed or pooped in 6 days, other than what would kind of fall out of him on the pee pad. I saw him struggle up the compost heap. It's all leaves. And he struggled up this, and when he got to the very top of the compost heap, he had his first little pee. He spread his little, he couldn't lift the leg like he used to do as a boy, but he could squat like Baby Speck did. And I said, Humphrey, you did your business. And for over a year now, we've watched him come back from that experience. What a gift it gave me. I got to see a love that doesn't codependently try to fix situations, a love that can't run away and say, I'm not going to deal with, but a love that would be there and sustain you through those times that are challenging. You know, when you find that, Judy was that for her mother for, was it 10 years she took care of her mother?
9 years,
yeah. And when you do that, there's something, you have this kind of fiber in yourself. Gigi knows what I'm talking about. To stay with someone and care for them, whether it's an old dog or a paralyzed pug, it does something to the soul. It lets you know that love is so much more than what we think it is. So yeah, we're talking about love this month and as the great purpose of life. And last week I talked about the gifts of love, that love is a gift. It's so funny, I didn't realize that we're doing a class on Tuesday nights and Wednesday mornings, Richard Rohr's the Mystic Path, and he says there are 7 pathways to connect to this divine love. And we were on the 6th pathway yesterday, and the 6 pathways to become love, no, to know love, you must become love. Or to know truth, you must become truth. Or to know peace, you must become peace. Thich Nhat Hanh wrote a little book called Being Peace. He didn't say thinking peace or creating an environment where there's peace. No, he said being peace. When you are peaceful, you will create peaceful experiences in your world. When you are being loving, all your relationships will be loving relationships, whether it's with a rock or a butterfly or with your mother. And even though she pushes your buttons, love is still there. Yes, we can create healthy boundaries. Could I spend eternity with my mother pushing my buttons? No. I can observe when she's in my space and we have that dance. But then she's better off in her own world where she can live her life as she lives her life. And then love is leading the way. In The Science of Mind, Dr. Ernest Holmes says, all is love and all is law. He stole that from Robert Browning, who said that earlier. He did a lot of that. But that's okay. Ernest can do what he does. He used to say, deep calling unto deep always responds. That was Ralph Waldo Emerson. He didn't give him credit. I guess you can do that when you become somebody. You can just take credit for know thyself. Socrates, but he would say know thyself. And, you know, you just learn that that's the way some writers do. So all is love and all is law. And then Ernest Holmes, and this is where he is original, he says, let love lead the way and then let the law make the way possible. Now, by law, we're talking spiritual laws. Jesus taught the great law that we base this whole teaching on. In one little phrase, he said, it's done unto you as you believe. So what are you believing? Are you believing in hate? Are you believing in separation? Are you believing in life sucks? Because if you believe life sucks, well, then don't be surprised if life starts to suck. If you believe life is hard, that's why I say be impeccable with your word. If you believe life is hard and it's a struggle and it's a dog-eat-dog world out there, what do you think you're creating? You're creating hard and difficult. So if you subtly change the way you approach life and say, life's getting easier, huh? When I was a brand new minister, Judy was with me way back then, I struggled with ministry. I would write 5 talks for every one that I would deliver here. And then I had to realize that I'm greater than my material. I wouldn't get stuck on writing 10 talks for every one thing. And so I created a mantra for myself early on in ministry, 30-some years ago. And that mantra I still use today. And that mantra is, let it be easy. Could I let ministry be easy? Could I let my relationships be easy? Could I let this COVID situation be easy, almost playful? You know, we go to the store once a week, we don our masks, and we have fun. We walk up and down the aisles, and we shop for the whole week, the grocery cart's full, and we smile at the girl behind, and she smiles at us, we call them by names. And they say, do you want to give some money to the children? And he always gives money to the children. And then we buy flowers for the house and wood for the fireplace. And we just said, do you want us to help with it? No, that's fine. And to think that going to the grocery store is the highlight of your week, who would have thought that that would make so much joy? But what if it's those little things that really are? You know, Mother Teresa said there are no acts of love, great love. She says there are only little acts done with great love. There are no great acts of love. Little acts done with great love. So could we find those little acts that are done with great love? Me lifting Bert's fanny as he goes up the steps. And the 2 dogs, Bert's gotten so that he can't eat his dog food. I put it out and he can't eat it. And he's 15. So what I learned that Bert likes to do is if I make a ravioli for him, I'll take a piece of turkey and I'll put his dog food in the ravioli and I fold it up. Well, then one little ravioli at a time, he'll eat his dinner. And Trey said, you're creating, you're spoiling the dog. I said, he won't eat otherwise. So he sits there. You would do it with your little girl, wouldn't you? And I put his food in the little ravioli, one ravioli at a time. He has his dinner. Now the pug, who's come back from his herniated disc, he's waiting for all the crumbs. He's down there. We call him Sweep because he's got the floor. He only has one eye, but he could, with his little nose, he could smell that food. When Bert drops it on the floor, he's cleaning it up. Little acts done with great love. Isn't that such a beautiful thing? So let love lead the way. Now that's powerful. I invite you to take that into your heart and ask, if I let love lead the way in my life, the law is going to make the way possible. So, you know, you're going to get to El Paso one way or another. Matt's going to be back in your arms again one way or another. And to let love lead the way during this whole adventure, then we don't have to put our good in the future. We can let our good be right now. You know, I got a sweet, I was looking at the Facebook page where Michael does this beautiful presentation on Sundays, and in the comments, thank you all out there who say you watch and say hi, how you doing? Hi, everybody. But I got one from her husband. Where was he? In
Saudi Arabia.
And I recognized his name, and he said, thank you, David, for providing me spiritual food all the way over here. So if this whole thing is done for you, Matt, that's beautiful, because doesn't that show you how we're all connected? And that we meet in that field of love, and that's what's really important. And that love is a deathless, eternal something. So if we have to let go of the idea of my love and your love, it's just the love. And that's what we all are. Love is the glue that holds the universe together. In this lovely book, he quotes people like Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein said, love is the generator that's within all of us, a scientist. And it's Teilhard de Chardin says, imagine someday when we can harness this power of love on this planet. He says, it will be the creation of fire for the second time. Could we meet in that field of love? Rumi says, out beyond the ideas of right thinking and wrong thinking. That's the first story in the Bible, eating from the tree of judgment of good and evil. Out beyond that good and bad, right and wrong, you and me, dark and light, out beyond that way of thinking, he says, there is a field, and that field is a field of love. And he says, and when the soul lies down in that field, and that's what we are, we're one soul with a body, it's a mistake to overly identify with the personality, the ego, and forget that we are this oversoul. The soul is the way spirit connects through us. The soul is that eternal part that was never born and never dies. And when you know yourself as that, well, then you start having soulful relationships. You know, even when Matt's all that distance, the love is still there. It's as strong as it ever was. And you realize you don't need the form. You don't need to grasp. I found a Rumi statement the other day that just kind of has been working on me. That's what the truth does. They're like pearls of great price. And Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is like a pearl of great price. He says sell everything for that pearl. Now he spoke in metaphor. So this little statement of Rumi was one sentence long. He says, cling to the pearl and let go of the shell. Huh. Cling to the pearl and let go of the shell. So what would the pearl be? The pearl would be the love that you and Matt share. The shell would be the form of the relationship. And yes, the form is important, but the pearl is what you have. That love will always be there. You know, I have the four-legged children, and every time I walk into the church, I see that photograph of myself on the bulletin board with baby Speck sitting, and she was always the perfect little girl. She was the embodiment of love. And I see her, and I feel that love that never died. All I have to do is look at that picture. And she was so obedient. I mean, she wanted to be trained. You know, they say dogs are wild. I would just say, sit, and she would sit. And you know, and I had this thing with the ball. She loved the ball, and I'd throw the ball. She'd catch the ball, and she'd throw the ball back at me. And then I'd throw the ball. She'd catch the ball. And when I was too tired to play ball with her, she'd lie on her back with her legs spread, and she would take the ball in her mouth, and she would lift the ball up into the air. She would let it go and catch it. And then she'd take the ball, and she'd lift it up in the air with her two paws. She'd open it and catch it. And this was the game that she would play for hours, and I would watch her. And little things done with great love. So what if we can be attentive and vigilant when love is showing us how it expresses itself? That's love. And it wasn't the conditional love. Now, the thing about dogs and cats, or at least my dogs, is that they love everybody. I can't say that she's special to me, because if Speckles were here, she'd go and put her head on Michael, then she'd go to you, Shannon, then she'd go to you, Chris. Before you know it, she'd be working the whole room. And then she'd come and say, was that good? And I say, that was good, baby. You make love to the whole room, because it's all you. So what if the littlest of those will show us the way? It's not the big complicated erudite Albert Einstein, but it's the little ones that show us the way about what love is really here. I was going through this book and trying to find the perfect thing to share with you, and I was reading a hospice worker who works with people at the end of their life. And I've been privileged to be with many people at that moment of transition. So many people, I can't even begin. And every single time I realize what a privilege it is. You know, that each one of us is temporary in our human form. And it was Jung that said, you can't escape being human. So in our human form, we're going to grieve the loss. We're going to suffer. But there's another aspect that every time I'm around death, I go to the truth, what doesn't die? You know, what doesn't die? What's always there? And this is what the hospice worker said, and it just really touched me deeply, because this is her job. She says, when death is near, everything superficial has been stripped away. You don't worry about what you did, what you didn't do, and all, you know, it all falls away. In fact, it was a year ago, Humphrey had his thing. My beloved Jane Stearns and my beloved Paul Fulford died within a week of each other. He had a massive heart attack, was gone the next day. She went into hospice, and she was gone within a week. And so their love, their presence is still here with me. And so if you've known anybody who's made their transition, this might apply. When death is near, everything superficial is stripped away. Everything that dragged us into the past or pushed us into the future has disappeared. Everything that required time and effort to heal has been discarded. Then the true meaning of this existence can be seen shining and illuminating the present moment. You know, the Sufis say when you incarnate with light and with love. And when you leave this mortal coil, you take the light with you, but you leave the love behind. Beautiful image. So she's going through them as their light is diminishing, as they're ready to step into the light, as the light, but the love endures. So here's this hospice worker describing how our job is to become love. This is her phrase. Life, a tapestry of beauty and pain. Accomplishments and failures, clarity and confusion, is really a journey of love. This is all a journey of love. A journey in love, through love, as love, to love. It's all love. So it's a journey of love. And that learning all the intricacies and nuances of love itself is the reason that we've come here. To learn the nuances of this love. A love that bears all things, accepts all things, endures all things. A love that has courage to speak its truth, to create healthy boundaries. Boy, this love is powerful. A love that's so strong we can say no when it's not acceptable. And a love so strong that we can say yes. The ultimate prayer is yes. Even when adversity comes, yes, bring it on. Because this love can meet it. When your little girl falls down, yes, come to mommy and I'll love you and kiss the boo-boo and make it better. You know, that's the best medicine of all. I learned that one from my grandmother. It might may sound crazy, but it's love working. He says, it's the greatest gift of life is the opportunity to give, to receive, and to become love. Now, when you hear a little phrase like that, circle it and underline it three times. It says, the great opportunity is to give. You know, the Beatles says, the love you make is the love you take. So we're here to give love. We're here to receive love. You know, when I look into your eyes, I receive love. Every time Shanna comes, I receive that zap of love. I have the picture of her husband and her on my desk because there was so much love that day standing up here. And I just have to look at that, and I'm receiving the love of that moment. That's an eternal moment for me. So we're here to give, receive, and ultimately become love. Huh. To become the love. Now, the irony is that you're already the love. But could we become more of what we are? Instead of Terry, instead of the anxious, worried, egoic self that wants to struggle, yes, we're that too. But underneath it, we're love. And the love would say, bring it on, Terry. Bring on the a-holes. Bring on the challenges. Bring on the conflict. And love would say, I can meet it. It's like Baby Speck playing with her ball. It's not a problem unless you call it a problem. It's just a ball falling from your paws. I can catch it and throw it out there. So you see things differently when love is leading the way. So she says, become love. And she says, if we can fix our gaze on nothing other than this love during our lifetime, then we will have discovered the deepest possible meaning of life has to offer. To just discover this love. You know, the love shows up sometimes as a rock given to you from a friend. The love shows up sometimes as a cup of coffee that's brought to you on Valentine's Day from a friend. The love shows up the time. It's so simple, and yet it's so difficult for us to grasp this reality, to allow love to guide our lives. To allow love to guide your lives. Michael Short does that sound in this every Sunday, and I know he does it because he loves me and he loves the center. It's not because he's making a lot of money at it or he's getting a lot of recognition. No, he does it for love. There was a musical called The Chorus Line, and there was a song, Donna McKechnie, she's a dancer, and she breaks her ankles. And then she sings the song, "Kiss today, goodbye," she can't dance, "and point me toward tomorrow. I did what I had to do. Don't regret, can't forget what I did for love. What I did for love." And the whole song is "what I did for love." So could we do what we do for love? Even if that is nipped in the bud. She couldn't dance anymore, but she could still let love lead the way into whatever manner. You know, sometimes some of the greatest dance teachers were those who couldn't dance anymore, but could inspire others to discover this creativity through movement. I come from the stage that's, so it's so simple and yet so difficult for us to grasp this reality, to allow love to guide our lives. But following the path, she says, then the love will unfold before us. It's truly the key to finding life's meaning. To give, to receive, and to become this love. The meaning of life. To give, to receive, and become this love. Is it that simple, David? Yeah, it's that simple. Where do you start? You start right here, right now. You start with yourself. Then you start with your mother and your friends and your children and your colleagues. Then you follow with the world. You know, when I feel anxious, and my prayer partner from Canada, he's concerned about America now. He says, "You had an impeachment hearing," and I said, "Listen, I don't want to go. I don't want to go there right now with you." You know, it's like, could we face that stuff not with the idea that it's right or wrong or bad, or that we're just meeting ourselves there and learn to navigate throughout all of that? So it's a discovery process. How am I going to face this life in a skillful way where love is leading the way? And then when life presents to you this challenge or that challenge, you can ask that question. You know, a lot of the Christians have WWJD, what would Jesus do? I'd like to go WWLD, what would love do here? You know, how would love respond to a challenge? How would love respond to a fear? How would love respond to the demons that come up? Oh, ain't it awful, ain't it awful? And those demons are out there. You know, my partner, he's concerned about Wednesday morning when we're supposed to have an ice storm in Huntsville. And then he's reflecting back on other ice storms that we've had in the past where the electrical lines will collapse and you'll have no heat. And so because his mind is running away with these ideas, I went out this morning, we bought candles for the house and flashlights in case the lights go out. And we got wood for the fireplace to keep us warm. And we got bread and food and dog food and make sure that when all this happens, we'll be safe. And that's what the mind wants to do. Whereas the heart, it knows it's always safe, no matter what happens. So could we move out of the expert mind that has all the answers and move into this beginner's mind that doesn't have any answers, that's open to uncertainty? And we're on uncertain times. It was Emerson that said, "We all seek to be certain." He says, "But only to the degree that we are uncertain is there any hope for us." So paradoxically, could we open to the "I don't know what to do," but something in me does? Love knows what to do. You know, I know you as a young mother, it's your first child. Sometimes you go, "I don't know what I'm supposed to do," but the love in you knows what to do. And especially if we've had parents that weren't very skillful. My parents didn't have a clue what they were doing. I don't know how I was considered, we survived. It was survival. It wasn't like they raised us. We survived these two crazy parents that did the best they could. Michael knows what I'm talking about. And yet I realized that underneath it, the love was there. It may not have been the most skillful love. My father was an alcoholic, but he did love us as he could. My mother was a codependent person, but she loved as she could. And you take the best of that, and then you forgive the not-so-great stuff, and then you carry forth, having reaped the gift of that. It's the gifts of love. And I wanted to give you a little Ernest Holmes. He's the founder of this teaching. And he talks about love all the time. He's the one that said that love is the givingness of the universe to its creation. And he says, no, it is the creation. His words are so beautiful. Okay. He says, love is the self-givingness of spirit through the desire of life to express itself in terms of its creation. So this love is giving of itself through its creation, which is you and me. Now you let that seed go into you. So if what we are is love's expression, then he goes on further to say, Love is the central flame of the universe. Nay, it is the very life itself. So what if this central flame of the universe is the same love that Albert Einstein's talking about, that Teilhard de Chardin is talking about, and it's what we are, and we are becoming more and more of that love. And when that love flowers, it starts painting rocks. When that love flowers, it becomes a mommy and starts nurturing another aspect of life. When that flowers, it starts having the courage to be in a relationship. You know, relationships, Ram Dass said, are the toughest yoga of them all. Drink that one in, Chris. Relationship is the toughest yoga of them all. In the Greeks, they talk about love as eros, philos, and agape. Eros is the sexual love, the physical love that we have. Hopefully, we'll have a very loving, intimate relationship on this planet. But then the next form of love is the philos love, the brotherly love. What we share here is brotherly love, which is very, very deep. If you can have a really deep friendship with another human being. And then the third form of love, according to Aristotle, is the agape love, which is the spiritual love, which is the love we have for Source. You know, and as a young man, I felt this ache in my heart. And I thought it was an ache for God, an ache for something that I didn't understand until I realized that it was God's aching for me. It was the universe's aching. And the way that this presence operated in my life, it wanted to express itself creatively. I was a dancer, I was an artist, I was a horticulturalist, but I really was a transcendentalist. I would sit with flowers and merge with the flowers. And I realized this was God, through love, in its own unique way, bringing me to itself. So what if we get playful? You know, Jesus says you have to be like a child if you would enter the kingdom. And children are curious. They're filled with wonder. They want to discover that which wants to express through them. You know that with your little girl. So could we take that sense of wonder that never left? Could we awaken to the wonder of a butterfly? You know, Jean Anne gave me a cocoon in a jar. And I watched that cocoon for a week. And I watched this beautiful butterfly reveal herself to me. And then she would crawl out of the jar and she would walk on my hand. And I realized that all that butterfly wanted was my love. I kept trying to force feed her. I created a puddle for her. I created flowers for her. And she just wanted my love. She kept going and gravitating toward my hand. So could I have been humble enough to just let the love exchange instead of trying to fix her life? Ultimately, she made her transition after 10 days. And I still have the memory of that love that never died. So what if these little things come into your life to point to something so much bigger? He says, love is a fire and I am wood. That's Rumi. Love is a fire and I am wood. This fire that will consume you. Rumi said, I can sum up my life in three words. I burned and I burned and I burned. So this love burned him up. He said, all swimming in this ocean of love ends in drowning. Holy cow, what a metaphor is that? When you dive into this ocean of love, there is no you and the love, there is just the love moving through you as you. And that's the truth of love. So this is his little thing on Valentine's Day. This is called 365 Days. So it's like a book. Every day there's a prayer. And here's his prayer for Valentine's Day. He says, love is the essence of my being. That's the title. And he quotes the book of John. Let us love not in word, neither in tongue, but love in deed and in truth. He used to say, by their actions, ye shall know them. So are your actions loving actions? You know, are you smiling at the checkout girl? Are you, are you loving with your animals? Are you treating them with respect? Are you loving with your shoes? When I was in Turkey, in Istanbul, the whole spiritual path of Islam is one word, adab. And adab means respect. So when you take off your shoes, you place your shoes. When you eat, you have the adab with the eating. When you meet someone on the street, you touch your heart and you acknowledge them. Everything is adab. When you see the tree, you touch the tree and you acknowledge the beauty of the tree, the flower, the butterfly, all is adab. That's love. So here's Ernest Holmes on Valentine's Day. He says, since God is love and God is all in all, then love must be the underlying principle of life and therefore in all. This love is in all. It was in that little butterfly. This life is my life, he says, and this love is me. And it is the very essence of my being. He says, love heals everything. Heals everything. Every imperfection of the mind or the body or our environment. Love alone may overcome hatred and anger and envy and criticism. And he says, where love is, there is no room for any negative emotion. Love is the great adjuster. He has it in all capital letters. Love is the great adjuster. It's adjusting your mind. You're not thinking hateful, confused. It's adjusting your heart. You're not closing your heart off to anyone. Even when they push your buttons, you keep your heart open. You know. So then he goes on to conclude, I know that love is harmony and peace and joy. I know that love is all good and all that is true, all that is beautiful. I know that it is perfect balance and perfect poise. I empty my mind and my heart of all but love. I empty my mind and my heart of all but love. And then I let love express in me and through me and as me. I let love flow out into my world of thought and action because I have become love. I am love. The love in me shines forth as harmony, peace, joy, and freedom and wisdom. Love binds me to the whole of creation and I find fulfillment in life through loving. I am being love, ever becoming love with every breath and action. Wow. So let me take you on a little journey into love as a closing meditation. On our satsang Wednesday night, this Wednesday night, Glory G said, I want to take us on a spiritual journey. And she said, do you have any ideas? I says, why don't you take us over the rainbow? And so in this shamanic journey with the rattle and the drum, she took us into a memory of a rainbow. And she invited us to move into the color red. And she said, imagine some red roses and allow yourself to feel the love of the rose. And what is the rose saying to you? And of course, it's saying to me, open, flower, bloom. She says, now I want you to move into the color orange. Now, this is an alternative way of seeing. You're not in logical mind. You're here in non-ordinary mind. And so in this shamanic journey with the drum and the rattle, imagine orange. She said, imagine the rays of the sunlight. Imagine a sunset or a sunrise when the sky fills up with that orange light. And I'm riding the waves of that light as if I were a bird soaring through the orange. And I was sitting on a beach at Lamantour Beach on the Pacific Ocean and seeing as the sun went down in the sky, it's just this beautiful orange and I'm feeling it caressing me. And then she says, now move into the color yellow. When troubles melt like lemon drops, and all of a sudden I'm seeing lemon drops melting everywhere, and my troubles are melting like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where you'll find me. So all of a sudden now I'm in the song Over the Rainbow, and troubles are melting like lemon drops, and she turns us into now the color green. Nature is all around you. And I'm sitting in my dining room, listening to this shamanic journey, and the dining room is just filled with plants. And all of a sudden, I'm in the leaf of the plant, and I'm experiencing the photosynthesis of the light coming into the leaf, and the leaf making life out of the light. And I'm thinking, I am on an acid trip, on a journey. I'm literally in the leaf, having photosynthesis take place in me. When she got to blue, I was in the heavens. When she got to indigo, I was in the night sky. And then when she got to lavender, the last color of the rainbow, I'm in a painting that we have in the classroom that used to hang up on the sanctuary at the other building. Judy remembers it. And it was a watercolor from someone who came 30-some years ago. And it's the mountains of Alabama covered with clouds and fog. And everything's done in shades of lavender. And it's as I fell into that beautiful painting. And it all came full force that I had landed somewhere over the rainbow in a state of consciousness that was embracing everything as my own self. Because love was meeting love in the roses, in the lemon drops, in the sunshine, in the leaf, in the sky, and it was all me. And so could we enter into the sanctuary of our heart this Sunday morning and feel that love that's always there? And I hear the loving kindness meditation. It's a Buddhist prayer that I say all the time. So I invite you to place your hands over your heart and join with me and say, to yourself, may I be filled with loving kindness. Say this with me. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. and may I be happy. Now envision someone that you want to send love to. See them in your mind's eye and say, may you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. And may you be happy. And now let's extend this love to the whole planet right now. There's a lot of suffering, a lot of death, a lot of confusion, a lot of anxiety. And so let's include this whole planet and say, may we be filled with loving kindness. May we be well. May we be peaceful and at ease. And may we be happy. And now just take a few beats to feel that love rippling out. The love you make is the love you take. We only receive what we give. And so we receive this love, we give this love, we become this love, because we are this love. As the song says, all there is love. As you're feeling this love in your heart, I hear Karen Drucker's song coming into my heart. A song that she wrote when she was marinating in this ocean of love. And she came up these words from the heart of her being. She says, there is only love. There is only love. A love that heals, a love that sets us free. There is only love. And she says, when I lose my way and I can't find anything to lighten my path, I stop and I turn within and I feel that presence of love. And I affirm again, there is only love. There is only love. A love that heals, a love that sets me free. And I am becoming that love with every breath. Every breath. So breathing in. And breathing out. Let's say to this love together in the heart salutation, I honor you. I respect you. I love you. You are the deepest aspect of myself. The love that I am becoming is the love that is world without end. You are that, and so am I, and so it is. Open your eyes, open your hands. Let the vibration of it ripple out into the universe. Happy Valentine's Day. Thank you for showing up here. Thank you for your heart rock. I'm calling them heart rocks now. And we'll save distance. Thank you for sending in your money to help us pay the bills.
Listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.